on May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to another edition of the Dado Download Podcast, a part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, alongside my co-host, the young buck, the slick hair over there, Jack Smith. Jack, how are we doing tonight?
Shotgun doing very well tonight. We're doing a little midnight edition of this podcast, at least on your end.
Yeah, we're splitting up the podcast. We're going to do our portion right now. We're going to talk to Andy Stankiewicz later. It's going to be awesome. We've been waiting to have Andy Stankiewicz on. We actually had him lined up for the last episode, and then he lost his voice. And we said, whoa, we can't take your voice away. You got to yell at these guys on the field and get them going if that's what needs to be happening. So we said, we'll take a reprieve. We'll get you next time. And he's been so gracious enough to give us his time, as well as all the players and coaches and whatnot. So we really appreciate that. But he's going to join us later in the episode. But Jack, we got to talk about what is going on right now. I mean, we're here on the Dado Download Podcast to talk about USC Trojans, the baseball program, a team that many people had given up on just a couple weeks ago, but this group has shown some resilience and seems to be figuring itself out as the season continues, even without the consistency at perhaps the most important place where you need that consistency. What was once supposed to be the strength of the Trojans has turned into a weakness that is somehow still a strength, I guess. How are we describing this? And I'm talking about the starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean, the pitching is really interesting. Right now, I think it's like a group of mercenaries that has a bunch of undefined roles where there are guys who are normally starters who are in the bullpen. There are relievers making starts. There are closers throwing in the middle of games. It's all over the place, Shotgun, but they're still getting outs and they're not allowing too many runs. So I guess it's a strength, but it's not a normal rotation. I think it's the least solid rotation that we have seen for any point in this season.
We'll definitely be breaking that down a little bit more here shortly as we talk about all the action that's taken place since our last episode, as unfortunately our schedule was a bit thrown off in large part due to the programs playing over there at that Galen Center thing. The women of Troy were hosting the NCAA tournament games over there. They were making a run to the Elite Eight. The men's team, they saw one of their most successful head coaches in program history peace out. Heading to Texas, guys. You know, everything's bigger in Texas, right? Including the contract. So I'm heading out. And then we saw Jim Cohen, the AD, go to work and reel in Eric Musselman as the new head coach. So a lot of things were going on. Obviously, there's in between all that, there's some spring football that's going on. And a ton of recruiting news is popping. USC is getting recruits left and right, and running backs left and right and left and right and left and right. You know, it can be student body left and right now with as many guys as are reeling in there, which is why I got to say it's vital, vital for you guys to make sure you subscribe to uscfootball.com and you're a member of the Peristyle, where all kinds of inside info has been flying around our message boards. Jack, I don't know if you can keep up. I know on baseball weekends, I can't keep up. Like, I leave and then I'm like, all right, Sunday night or Monday morning, I just got to catch up with everything that's going on the message board. I know there's been like 40 official visits or unofficial visits coming over the weekend. I got to catch up. Let's see what's going on. Let's see who's committing, all those type of things. But there's so much going on right now around USC, and people are forgetting that there's a baseball program because they started out slow, but seems to be finding their way. What are you seeing from the Trojans? What are you seeing from USC right now with everything popping on campus?
Well, Thursday was the craziest, one of the craziest days, at least on paper, that I've been on campus. Eric Musselman was hired kind of in the mid-morning. Travis Scott was on campus, so he met with the football team. But there was also like a 5,000 to 6,000 person line going from the bookstore all the way past Heritage Hall. People had gotten in line like 8 p.m. the previous night. There was a car that was driven through the wall of a parking structure. Like everything was going on Thursday. And it's kind of just a normal day. Like there's never a dull moment. I'll have to catch you up on that car, but you're right. There is the baseball program is still playing games. And Chuck, and since our last show, which was a couple weeks ago, they've really turned things around. 8-3 since the last time that we recorded. There have been some midweek games and the Trojans are 2-1 in the midweek since we last recorded. But the key is the three big Pac-12 series that have occurred since we were last on the mics. You and I were there as USC lost the series to UCLA. They got a huge Friday win, then lost the next two. Then they battled off.
I was only there for the good stuff. Okay, so I was there Friday. I was there Friday with you. I was there for an inning because the rain came and I'm like, this is taking, like the rain delay started. There was lightning. We had a live show we were doing that Sunday night. That was the last time I was in LA, you know, a couple weeks ago. And I was like, I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm gonna push it and I'm gonna threaten myself. I'm not making it to the live show because it's also raining. And people in LA are driving and someone's going to, you know, freak out and have an accident or whatever. I'm not going to make the live show. So I was like, I got to get out of here. Saw a beautiful rainbow on the way out. And I thought it was a great omen. USC is going to come back. They're losing that game. It didn't happen. But since then, that's where the rainbow has come. It was when they were leaving the park. They found the rainbow, it seems to. You know, they dominated UCLA on that Friday and then lose the series, which is really disappointing. It seemed like they were turning things around. And we were kind of like, all right, we'll see where they're going. We're busy this week. You know, we're going to skip this week. And then as far as the podcast, and then things started slowly. You know, that little, the wheels start. It's like the choo-choo train.
That's what Andy Stankiewicz calls it. He calls it the Trojan train.
Oh, I'm nailing these, you know, the metaphors here, and I didn't even mean to.
Yeah, but since that last loss, the Sunday one after the rain delay to UCLA, the Trojans have rattled off 5 straight conference wins. And I posed the philosophical question on the broadcast the other day, is a 2-game sweep or is a 2-game series with 2 wins and then a rainout, is that a sweep? I'd answer no, but the Trojans got back and they swept the Washington Huskies this past weekend, tonight when we're recording. So 5 straight conference wins, including 2 over number 2 Oregon State and then a sweep over the Pac-12's kind of bottom feeding team this year in Washington. But 5 straight conference wins for USC, 7 straight home wins for USC, and they're a win away from 500 shotgun, sitting at 15-16 overall, 9-5 in Pac-12 play.
This was a team that was 3-11 at one point, 4-12. What was it, 2-9 before that? So depending on it's hard sometimes when you're looking at these, you're like looking for the stretches to like really highlight, you know, for me when I'm looking on D1 for D1 baseball, when I want to, hey, Northeastern's won this many games in a row. You're like, all right, do I want to point out that it's 11-14 or 11-13, or do I want to point out this 15-19? Like, how do I figure it out? And USC, the beginning of the schedule is like, there's several points. You can be like, they were bad here. They're even worse here. And they were bad here. Like, which one do I want to point out? But 3-11, I think is probably exemplifies the best for me. 4-12, terrible start. Terrible start. Just did not play well. Did not play good defense. Did not produce well on offense. Did not play as a team. And then suddenly, slowly started putting things together. And you mentioned, so let's go into the philosophical debate real quick before we get into a full breakdown of the teams they played and whatnot. Let's get the debate out of whether 2 games is a sweep or not. I would question you. You would say no.
I say no.
Okay.
Unless it's a scheduled 2-game series, then I can maybe get behind it. But I'm going to say no for 2 wins and a rainout.
What do you call it when a team plays a doubleheader and they win both games? Do you say they swept the doubleheader?
Or do I guess you sweep the doubleheader.
They won both games of a doubleheader. No, you say they swept the doubleheader.
I think that lends itself to the, if it's a scheduled 2-game series, you sweep the series. But I don't think you can sweep the series when the series was supposed to be 3 games and you only played 2.
I see the debate there. the most important thing about this question is that I'm right, and also that USC doubled the loss total of Oregon State. Oregon State now, sitting today, they just swept Arizona State, came back in one game. They find ways to win, but not against USC. Oregon State is now 26-4. Two of their losses, half of their losses, through more than half the schedule, came against USC. That is a statement. And honestly, if you're USC, you're upset that you lost that game, because they were playing really well in that series, and you felt like you had Oregon State in the ropes. Now, Oregon State has bounced back. You know, after that, they had a couple of midweek games that they won. That gave them a little bit of confidence, and they went into the Arizona State series and were able to win that series, sweeping them. But I think they were a little, you know, a little flabbergasted. Like, oh, USC just punched us in the face, and how do we deal with this? And USC won in a couple different ways in that series, but they found ways to win. And I think going into that Sunday, you got to feel a ton of confidence on USC's side and maybe a little bit of doubt on the Oregon State side. So if I'm the USC coaching staff, dang it, we got it rained out because we were playing so well this weekend. We wanted to play that top team because that's going to be a big RPI boost. One, just playing the game is an RPI boost. Unfortunately, the way the RPI is set up, playing good teams or playing highly ranked teams boosts your RPI. Doesn't matter if you win or lose. Helps if you win, for sure. But just playing them boosts your RPI. That's why you see some teams later in the season start canceling games against teams with bad RPIs. It's an annoying thing. But so that would have definitely helped their RPI. And that suddenly matters because of the way they played the last few weeks and have gotten themselves closing in on being back to 500. We'll see if they can do it this week against some tough teams. They'll play UC Irvine, they'll play Oregon. That's a tough stretch. They're one game below 500. They are currently, though, after sweeping that two games against Oregon State, I'll call it a sweep, even if you don't, and then sweeping Washington, they are now, I believe it's 9-5 in conference. They are half a game out of first place. They're behind Arizona. They're also behind Oregon State. Now, there's some differences as far as number of games played there, but if you count the wins one way and the losses one way, USC is half a game back. They're tied with Oregon in third place behind those two teams. You're setting yourself up. Now, you're setting yourself up for two things here, Jack. You're setting yourself up for one, to be in contention down the stretch. And as you continue, if you can continue to win games, that boosts your resume. Hey, they finished second in the Pac-12, or they won the Pac-12 regular season. Now we're looking at their, you know, they finished third or fourth, whatever it may be. You're looking at their resume on Selection Sunday. Is this a team that can get in, even though they had that terrible start? And you start looking at all the factors, and you look at where they place in the Pac-12. And even though the Pac-12 is shitty this year compared to where it can be at times, where it has been in the past, as far as the depth of the conference and just overall strength, you set yourself up there. But the second thing you set yourself up for, if that RPI is not good enough, now you're the 2 seed. Now you're the 3 seed in the Pac-12 tournament, and you give yourself a better opportunity to win that automatic bid. Because you saw last year, USC was, I believe they were the 5 seed, and Stanford was able to basically take a night off because they had the tiebreaker. They had already won their first game, and as the 1 seed, they had the tiebreaker, and they could say, we're not going to throw any of our good pitchers, type of thing. You're just setting yourself up, and the way it's set up, it's set up for those top 3 seeds to have the best opportunity to really win that conference tournament. So right in the mix right now. And that is not something that I would have said 2 weeks ago after seeing them lose the UCLA series when I thought that they were playing pretty well, or even before that when they were not playing well and they lost to Arizona.
And they've set themselves up in a spot where I would be shocked to see them not make the Pac-12 tournament, which is, again, not something we would have said a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's a great point. Remember, we were talking a couple weeks ago, is like, or a couple episodes ago at least, are they going to make the tournament? Or
is it going to be USC and UCLA that both miss it? That, exactly. At that point, it was kind of looking like that's what it was going to be. But they have played so well. I mean, when you win five straight conference games, you set yourself up in a pretty good position. But I want to go back to what you said about Oregon State maybe being on the ropes. They had Oregon State looking like a completely different team than many expected. There's a team that made six errors in the game on what was Friday, but it was the second game, which I was looking back before the game got rained out, and I eventually just stopped my research because I found out that the game was canceled. I went back 10, 15 years, couldn't find a game where Oregon State had six or more errors, not even close. They made the team look completely different, scored the most runs on the Beavers in quite some time, and they had Oregon State kind of uncharacteristically chirping and getting upset and kind of yelling at the USC dugout, and that was fueling the Trojans for the Saturday game that eventually didn't happen. But it was going to be a chippy game on Saturday, and I think Oregon State was just really out of its element, which it's tough to make a good Beavers team get outside of themselves like that. And USC did it in two different ways, with a one really low scoring game and then blowing the doors off of them the second game.
Yeah, definitely. And just real quick, back to the standings, I just pulled them up. With their sweep of Washington, USC is, in my mind, they pretty much locked up that they're going to finish above Washington. Washington's now 3-9. They're six games under 500 in Pac-12 play. USC's four games over. That would take a dramatic swing. Cal has really hit the skids. They and UCLA are now 5-10 in conference play. So USC has, you know, they have what? I think it's 3.5-4 games up on those. So that's a great place to be, as you're basically halfway through. You know, if they would have played the Oregon State game, they'd be halfway through. They'd be 15 games in. So halfway through, if you're that, should at least make the tournament. To at minimum, make the tournament. You know, there's three teams down there that are way below them. Like we said last couple episodes ago, we were like, oh, we'll see if USC even makes the tournament. And we were questioning, like, who's playing well now? You know, is USC a part of that? Instead, USC's gone on this run, still under 500 on the season, and we'll see if they can change that. But they've set themselves up in the Pac-12 race right now, and we'll see if they can build on it. First half of the Pac-12 schedule, 9-5. And there's some positive and negatives there. The fact you already played Oregon State, that's a huge positive, and the fact that you did well. And Arizona, another team that's in the top. So a lot of the games remaining are the bottom half teams right now. So that tells you USC has an opportunity to make a run too. So it's the standings, looking at that. And I think that's one of the more important things to look at, because looking at the RPI needs report, and I don't know if you know about this or our listeners know about this, there's this website called Boys World, which does an RPI needs report. So it will tell you, all right, USC has, well, they played 31 games. So they, out of 56, they have 25 games left. How many games of those do they need to win on the road, at home, to be in the top 45? They're predicting the top 45 of RPI. Because if you're in the top 45 in a power conference, normally you are going to get in as an at-large team. And basically, it's USC can lose one or two games. So they got to, you know, be pretty perfect as they go. So then the Pac-12 standings are going to play a big part as setting yourself up to make a run in the Pac-12 tournament as well.
Yeah, and we mentioned that USC really would have to turn into one of the best teams in the country to overcome the slow start. I mean, 3-11 is the worst 14-game start in program history. Same thing could be said about 2-9. Same thing can be said about 0-5. Like, they dug themselves a really, really deep hole, and they did it against some really good teams, and they did it in some games that they probably should have won and maybe were the better team but just couldn't win. And so I think you and I both knew that no matter what, no matter how well they played, that the slow start would probably hurt them. But this is still, you know, I think it's a lot like the football program in year one under Lincoln Riley. They went a really long way. They came so close that then maybe raise the expectations a little bit higher. If you were looking at if the first year under Andy Stankiewicz was the second and this year was the first, you'd still feel pretty positive about where this program is in 2 years compared to where it was when he took over. But just seeing the way that the Trojans are playing right now, they are playing like a team that might deserve to be in the tournament, But you're right, they're going to have to overcome that 3-11 start, and it's going to be difficult. Before we get into our three up, three down, I think we should go through some key stats because it's been a little bit since we recorded. Remember that when the Trojans' average was not even above 200, shotgun, it's up to 257 now. That's up 20 points since our last show. They're scoring 5.7 runs per game now. That's up a run and a half since our last show. ERA is at 4.76. It's down nearly a run since our last show. And really the big one for me, they're striking out just 7 times per game in Pac-12 play. And it's kind of one of the parts of playing much more solid baseball, clean baseball. They're executing better. It's just looking like a much better team over the past couple weeks.
And also getting some new faces in there more consistently. Some of those freshmen have really, you know, I feel like they've gone from these are the guys who performed in the fall. We gave them their chances early. And we saw a ton of strikeouts, whether it be those older guys, whether it be some older transfers, Chris Brown, Luca DiPaolo. And some of those guys are starting to slowly get integrated back in and get their opportunities. But those guys started out poorly, and they said, we need to at least put the ball in play and give ourselves a chance. And we've seen some other guys step in and, you know, make an impact by giving themselves a chance by putting the ball in play and seeing, you know, if the defense can make a play. And you never know when Oregon State's going to have just an awful day and throw the ball around and commit a bunch of errors. They don't do that if you strike out 15 times in the game. So, you know, I think that's really important that they've changed their philosophy at least a little bit as far as the lineup construction and been like, let's get guys in there. They're going to put the ball in play and see if we can, you know, make some things happen. They've been pretty aggressive on the base pass, you know, seen some hit and run, see some stolen base. Got even with some guys that I'm like, why are you running with this guy all the time? This guy gets thrown out more times than I would run with them and give him a chance. But they want to put that pressure on the defense. And there was one today, I don't even remember who it was, but I was like, why are you running with that guy? And the throw was either low or it was a bounce or something. And the second baseman couldn't come up with it, and the guy was safe. And I was like, I wouldn't have sent that guy. That would not have been someone I thought of to send. But you put the pressure on the defense, and especially when a team is on a Sunday and they're facing a sweep and they're already down in a game, and just that extra pressure just adds up on college athletes. And you say, just keep pushing it on it. Put it on them. Put them on it. Put them on them. And if you get thrown out once, sure. And there's going to be a couple games where that hurts you, where you're super aggressive and it hurts you. I just was at a game between Northeastern and Towson. Towson's like 7-22. Northeastern's, you know, near the top of their conference, and they're super aggressive. But I talked to the coach afterwards, Mike Glavin, Tom Glavin's brother, and he's like, we have to be aggressive. That's the mentality we need to have at all times. Whether we're playing a good team, whether playing a team that's, you know, doesn't have as much talent, we have to be aggressive because that's when we're our best. We can't be submissive and passive and let other teams determine how you're going to go about it. And especially when you've gotten yourself in a hole for the season, like, I think that's the mentality you have to have. Like, we're going to attack. If it hurts us sometimes, so be it. But if we attack and do things the right way, even if we're running with a slower guy, but if we're attacking and not just messing things up, like you're not botching a hit and run, like you're not just not swinging or whatever. But as long as you're attacking, then you're putting the pressure on the defense. And I think that's something that USC has done a lot that I've seen. And you've obviously seen much more of them play recently. I'm kind of catching glimpses here and there as I'm driving around and, you know, going to the DMV and all these other places. But that's one thing that stood out to me is the aggressiveness and the approach on the base pass, and also not necessarily at the plate. And I think they've been more selective at the plate, but the aggressive mentality of it, of when there's a pitch in the zone, we're going to attack. We're not going to take a strike. We're going to, you know, we're going to be aggressive still at the plate, but we're going to try to stay in the zone at the same time.
Yeah, I would say it's like aggressive but composed. They're not swinging out of their ass, for lack of a better word. They're not swinging at pitches out of the strike zone and trying to swing their way out of a slump. It's more, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to play our game, because the small ball's been there too. I mean, I think the best example for me this weekend was Dean Carpentier hits his first career home run, hits it out of the park. It was a shot to left. The next time he comes up, there's first and second, nobody out, and they ask him to sack bunt, because that's just how this offense works. It can go to the one spot, to the nine spot in the order. Anyone could be asked to do it. That's just playing situational baseball, and they don't play with, you know, heat checks and hot streaks and everything like that. if it's your turn in the order to bunt, you're going to bunt because that's how this offense works. And they've had some bunts for hits. They've had sack bunts. They've had sacrifice flies. They've had stolen bases. That small ball approach is something I think that they tried to play out of at the beginning part of the season, maybe not realizing what their identity was. But then they think they realized after seeing so many balls die on the warning track in Arizona and as the weeks went on, we're not a home run hitting team. We're a team that's going to paper cut you to death.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see how this team has morphed, I guess maybe a good way to, or you know, just
evolved.
Evolved is probably a better word, adapted. Just see, all right, who are our guys? And I think that was something that last year they knew better. There was less talent on the roster, and they were like, these are the guys we got. These guys we got to roll with. These are the guys that need to be dudes for us. And there weren't a lot of options after that. So if someone's struggling, all right, Ryan Jackson, remember he got off to a terrible start last year. And it's like, we got to roll with him. He's one of our guys. We need him to play. So we're going to leave him in there. We're going to have confidence in him. And that's always an interesting, you know, a dilemma for coaches is like, how much do I trust this guy and give him and try to give him a vote of confidence? Like, I'm going to stick with you versus I got to get some production and maybe I got to try somebody different. And so they're finding that balancing act. And maybe that was something that they were dealing with early because a lot of guys had good falls or guys showed some flashes and they're like, and they're young guys that show some things. And like, we want to give this guy a chance, but then who do we take out and how do we figure it out? And I feel like the lineup has definitely become more solidified. You're seeing the same guys more frequently in the lineup and they figured out who are the guys in the bullpen. X, Xavier Martinez, and Josh Blum are the two guys at the back end. That's it. When we get to the seventh inning, all right, Xavier Martinez is probably going two. We're going to get turned over to Blum for one. If we have to, you know, split that up somehow differently, that's the case. And there are a couple other guys that are, you know, in the mix there. If one of those guys is tired or if we need a sixth inning, we need a fifth inning. But if Phil's more consistent there versus when I saw him the opening weekend and I saw him against BYU and I saw him against Grand Canyon, it was like, all right, we're gonna give this guy an inning and then we're gonna give this guy an inning. And this guy might be rolling that first inning, but we want to see what we got from this other guy too. So we got to check him. So like, I feel like the roles have become much more solidified and I think that's helped them out to, you know, just streamline it and be able to go after it much more like last year where it was like, we got these three guys in the back end. That's who's going to be. Now you're seeing that as well this year where like Xavier Martinez, I think what he's got 15 appearances now in 30 games. So like mm-hmm. he's pitching every other game one way or another.
And it's always multiple innings.
A lot.
And it's always multiple innings. He goes, I mean, their dream plan is it's the seventh inning. We've got a couple run lead. Martinez goes 7-8, Blum goes 9, and he gets the save. But as we move into our three up and three down, one thing that you mentioned is having kind of knowing who the guys are and realizing who the guys are in the lineup specifically. And I think one of the reasons that they've been able to solidify the lineup is because those veteran bats are finally coming back around. We mentioned it early on, the freshmen got run because the veterans, the sophomores that were expected to be a big piece to this team, just weren't hitting the ball. You had a lot of guys struggling. Those guys are finally coming back around. You know, Galloway is still hitting the crap out of the ball. Austin O'Vern is still playing well. He had a little bit of a slump, but in a triple and a homer the other day, this is getting on base a lot more from the leadoff spot. And we have not seen him move down in the order at all. He is continuing to hit in the leadoff spot, even after he had that little bit of a stretch where he was hitting 8 and 9. He is back in the leadoff spot, and he's back getting on base and helping the team. But the three guys that are really turning things around are Ryan Jackson primarily, hitting .352 in the Pac-12, went 7-for-13 this weekend against Washington. Ethan Hedges is picking things up, hitting .333 in conference play and hitting for a lot more power at his first home run against Oregon State, a couple triples in the weekend against UW. And then Carson Wells, who was scratched these last couple days with a hamstring injury, but he's got hits in 8 of his last 9 games. He's got the average up to .266. Those three have really helped solidify the order behind Galloway and Overn, and that's what makes you feel like you've got the top six figured out instead of just the top two like it was for so long.
Yeah, and one guy I want to point out is I didn't necessarily have him on my thing. One of my three ups is unfazed freshman, and I would put him in this category is Braden Dowd. has come in, and, you know, it's not like he's batting eighth or ninth in the lineup. They got him at fourth or fifth in the lineup, and he's been consistent there. He's batting 340 right now. You know, not necessarily a bunch of power or anything, but just slapping base hits. And when you have guys already on base in front of you, that is such a valuable tool. You know, he's batting in a spot that you normally think of as a power spot, you know, in the middle of the lineup. But that's not what USC needs right now. They just need guys that are going to, you know, hit the ball and let Overearn and, you know, Jackson and Galloway run. And all three of those guys have been, you know, off to the races a ton. And Braden Dowd's been a big part of that. So I thought I've been impressed with what he's done so far, you know, not striking out a ton, putting the ball in play, using his speed as well. And, you know, I think that same thing with Dean Carpentier, the, you know, making an impact as freshmen. So unfazed freshman was one of my standouts from one of my three up for this week.
Yeah, I think it is funny because normally the 3-4 spots in the order are like, oh, these are our power hitters. You don't want to face these guys with the runners on base because they're going to hit multi-run homers. And you've got Ryan Jackson hitting third and Braden Dowd hitting fourth. I mean, that is you've got your second baseman and your shorter freshman right fielder that are kind of slap hitters. I don't think they're slap hitters. They're really good hitters, but they're not
they're more
guys
line
with
drive
high slugging.
They're
line drive, they're singles, they're doubles into the gap. They're not off the wall doubles and triples and you know 400-foot homers. But they get the job done. They get on base. They move guys over and they bring guys in. And I think you're looking into conference play, which is when USC has played the best. The top three guys in run scoring for USC is Austin O'Vern in one, Jacob Galloway at two, and Ryan Jackson at three. And those are the top three guys in the order because when they get on, or Austin O'Vern gets on, Galloway's going to single him over, or Jackson's going to double him in, or two of those guys will be on, and Dowd's going to double both of them in. And that's the lineup construction that USC needs right now. And I think I like how Andy Stankiewicz is not thinking in that conventional lineup construction method, saying, well, I know these guys are struggling, like a Luca DiPaolo or a Chris Brown, but they've got power, and we need homers to win the game. He is just thinking, I need my best hitters in order from 1 to 9 because I need them to get on, move guys over, and bring them in. And that's just the way that this team is built to win games.
Yeah, exactly. And those are the two guys that you would think of, okay, those can be the 4-5 guys or the 3-4 guys. Like, if they are rolling, Chris Brown and Luca DiPaolo could be that. They ain't been rolling. That wheel has been a square, you know. It's just been boom, boom, boom. You know, the old commercial where they have to notch off the edges of the square to make it into a wheel. That needs to happen for USC. That would be lovely for them as they go down the stretch to suddenly get one of those guys or two of those guys to start providing some pop, because let's look at those power numbers for this team. And what do we have? Oh, it's Austin O'Vern leading the way and Jacob Galloway. So you have a What are we going to give Galloway? I don't know what he's listed at.
Galloway's listed at 5'9". I think he's a little bit taller. Austin O'Vern is listed at 6', and I wouldn't be surprised if he's a little bit shorter.
So we're going to go 5'9". We'll give Galloway 5'9". I don't think he's taller than that, but we'll give 5'9 and 5'11". So those are your two power guys right now, both with 5 home runs. And there's not like there's 6 guys with 4. There's Kevin Takuchi with 2, and I think both those
both
games
in
the
one
same game.
So
and a couple guys with 1. Like, it is not a power lineup for sure. And if those guys can add that, it just creates that different element that suddenly you're down 4-1 in a game and someone walks or somebody gets hit by a pitch, and suddenly you can one swing of the bat and you're right back in it type of thing. And a guy's been cruising along and it's the 7th inning type. That changes the way you can go about a game. But if those guys aren't consistently putting the ball in play, you're not going to play them. And that's what Andy Stankiewicz has done. And hey, I give credit to him because it's easy to say, one, Ethan Hedges early in the season. That's our guy. He was our guy last year. We're going to leave him in there. We're going to keep him there. No, they said, we're going to keep trying guys and trying to, and whoever plays is going to be the one that gets in. And I like the way also that he hasn't completely given up on the Chris Brown or Luca DiPaolo's. Those guys are still getting their opportunities. We saw Luca DiPaolo in the lineup today. We've seen Chris Brown get some pinch hit opportunities and stuff. They're still piecemealing their way. And you're hoping, as a coaching staff, you're hoping, all right, one big swing changes the direction of their season, that player's season. And we've seen it so many times. I don't know what your young eyes have seen, but I've seen it so many times in college baseball where you start going, like, wait, where did this guy come from? Oh, wait, he had a big hit, Jacob Galloway, last year. He got thrown in the mix. He was only going to be in there for a little bit. And, well, you got a couple hits, so let's keep him in there. Oh, we got a couple more. Let's keep rolling with it. And they take over a spot and they get that confidence because, again, if you have listened to me on any other podcast that talks about college athletics, 18 to 22-year-olds are so swayed by the emotions of confidence that, you know, they can do unsightly things that they didn't even know they could do once they get a little bit of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think Andy Stankiewicz has walked that fine line very well between not over trusting guys, not just saying, well, these were the guys that were supposed to be good, so I'm just going to leave them in there. But he's also not completely giving up on them and benching them at the first sign of struggle. I think he's done a good job keeping them in there at times, but also providing a little bit of inner competition by saying, this freshman's going to take your spot if you don't hit. I'm going to play them a little bit more, but then once they start to hit, get the spot a little bit back. And I think he's done a good job balancing that. And that's one of the things I'm excited to talk with him about in this episode. But Shotgun, we're running a little bit behind here on this segment.
All right, my second three up, three down. What you got?
My other two three up. One is home field advantage. USC at one point was 3-5 in games at their away from homes. They've won four straight home games. They've really gotten the crowds behind them, especially this past couple weekends at Cicerone Field, and then this weekend at Great Park. The crowds were there, they were big, and they were behind the Trojans. And then the other one is just like having the edge, which USC didn't have in the first part of the season. They weren't winning the close games. They couldn't put games away. They couldn't get the hit to bring in the runs. I think they're doing that a little bit better. They didn't let up at all against Oregon State, scoring 17 runs. They just kept piling on and piling on and piling on, and they really sunk the sword this weekend in Washington. Didn't let them have really an inch in any of the three games. They messed around a little bit today, I will say. They messed around a little bit here today in the Sunday game, but overall, they didn't let up from day to day, and I think that that's not something you saw from this team early on in the season, but they've got that edge right now that is just giving them a little bit extra distance to win these closer games.
I'm curious if when we talked to Andy Stankiewicz, if that Washington series had a little bit more impact. Because if you remember last year when they went to Washington and you look back on the schedule and you go, whew, they gave away a couple of those games and like, were those the difference?
Ended their season last year?
Exactly. Were those the difference between making a regional and not making a regional? Those games against Washington, you had a lead and you blew it in the bullpen. I think it was twice up there, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. So I wonder if there's a little bit of redemption. And so that also gives me a little bit of pause, like, okay, let's see how they do against someone that they handled last year, or whatever it may be, that is not ranked above them when they play, I don't know, Arizona State or Washington State. Like, how are you going to handle that series? Are you going to have the same killer instinct? And I thought they did have the killer instinct against Washington this weekend, so that was really important. My three up, three down, I already mentioned the unfazed freshman, whether it be Carpentier, whether it be Braden Dowd, those guys that are getting thrown in there. But then answering the call, and I say that because unfortunately for them, and maybe we can get an update a little bit later, but they had a couple late scratches. I mean, Eric Hamming is thrown in, and I believe it was you today on the broadcast that said he had 7 minutes to warm up. Was that what it was?
He found out 7 minutes before scheduled first pitch that Caden Aoki wasn't going to start and that he was going to start instead.
Get loose. 7 minutes.
He said he threw a couple of warm-up pitches in the bullpen and then went 5 innings. How about that?
Yeah. I'm curious. Did you see him go warm up after the first inning?
I did not know. Okay. We didn't know. We got ready. We took our headsets off for the anthem, and I turned to my partner. I'm like, what the hell is Eric Hammond doing out there? And why is Caden Aoki not out there? And so we run in, we ask, and we didn't get a great answer. So we just rolled with it for first pitch.
There was a late scratch with Caden Aoki. He felt some tightness from what I was told. Hopefully it's nothing serious. Obviously he's a huge part of the pitching staff. And that's why I mentioned earlier, their starting pitching has been inconsistent because they haven't even known who's going to be in the starting rotation because My other three up is Tyler Stromsborg finding his way. He has struggled with 0-5 to start the season in his first five starts. And it wasn't that he was pitching terrible. I think he got beat up in one start, but otherwise it was just wasn't pitching good. And so they demoted him. Said, all right, you're in a midweek. We're bringing Ficus up. We're bringing Will Watson pitched today to start. Got the start. Bring those guys up. You're getting sent down. You're getting demoted to the bullpen. He went to the bullpen, and similar with Eric Hammond, both these guys went to the bullpen and had terrific outings. And by bullpen, midweek start, those type things, out of the weekend rotation, as Stromsborg was really good in the midweek last week. Six innings, I think he had one run, and then he comes in, no runs.
No runs, just one hit.
Thank you for the shaking the head there. The one hit there instead of one run.
Great podcasting, yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
no one can see.
Teamwork here. And then he comes back, and a little bit surprising to me that he came back, I think it was 3 or 4 days rest, and comes in relief and lights out again. And so that is a huge positive sign in a season where you early in the year, you'd just be searching for these type of positive signs for USC. But if you can add that to the momentum they've already got, I think that's huge for them. They can get him back in the weekend rotation or whatever it may be. Like, if he's locked back in, it just solidifies so many things. Because now suddenly, if they get enough guy, if they get him and Hammond back, you can move Ficus back. And now he becomes that long reliever, you know, when you need him. Or he can, you know, be the ground ball guy because of the sidearm slot and stuff when you need a double play. It just gives you that many more options when those guys are going. And those guys haven't been going. So I just thought it was great to see him take the demotion and find a way to get better. And he did that the last couple of outings. So Tyler Stromsborg, and then answering the call for the late scratches, Eric Hammond, coming in on a Friday for Caden Oakey. Not just like, hey, all right, Caden Oakey's not available. We're going to bump everyone up and you're going to start on Sunday against their Sunday guy. No, you're going on a Friday. We need you to set the tone. And Eric Hammond did that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for start with Stromsborg, the final straw for him in the rotation was he pitched against UCLA, went just two innings, had given up five hits and four earned runs. He had 10 days off between pitching between UCLA and then UC San Diego. And I talked with Andy Stankiewicz ahead of the Oregon State series about, you know, making the move and why he did it. And he said he just wanted guys that got them out of the gate a little bit better. And Stromsborg wasn't doing that, just hadn't been able to go very deep into games either. And he said kind of one of the things was, since Stromsborg isn't a guy that's got a high 90s fastball, he just needs to be able to pitch inside to guys. And that's something that they weren't seeing from him and they wanted him to work on. But he got to go in the lab. He got 10 days off to kind of refresh the mind. And this week, Shotgun, he went 8.2 innings, three hits, one walk, no runs. So he basically threw, if you're counting at one game, he was, you know, one out away from throwing a complete game shutout. It just happened to come across two different appearances. You could see him potentially with Pac-12 pitcher of the week. Yeah.
We'll see.
He started a midweek game.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other candidates that just were lights
and
out.
Christian Lim for Stanford, I think, carried a no-hitter into the eighth, so he might get it. But
I mean, that's okay. I came from a game at Seton Hall yesterday, Seton Hall, Georgetown yesterday, that took a no-hitter, two outs in the ninth. Jack, I was so disappointed because I was there to potentially write a story about Georgetown, and then Georgetown's bats get shut down. I'm like, all right, Seton Hall starter was really good. Ryan Reich had 13 Ks, seven in his longest start of his career, all these type things. It's going to happen. And unfortunately, the two outs in the ninth, line drive is shortstop, and the shortstop is about 5'10". If he was 6'5", I think he catches it. So.
We're seeing taller shortstops across baseball now, so maybe that's why. But Tyler Stromsborg was amazing this week. Even if it was just the midweek start, we'd be here applauding it. He only faced one batter above the minimum, I believe. He went six innings, just the one hit. Then he comes back, and I was so surprised that he even went multiple innings to go 2 2/3. He had a chance to finish that inning that he was in. I think he gave up a hit, and then Andy Stankiewicz went back to the bullpen. But he almost went nine complete innings this week between two different appearances. He was very, very good.
Yeah, outstanding. So he's definitely my three up. What about on the other side? What do you got with your three down? Now, let me start real quick with one of them, because I mentioned the guys answering the call, but I got some itching issues. I got some itching issues with all these scratches that USC's had this past weekend. So that's one of my three down. Scratching Caden Oki right before his start, definite big concern there. Definite big concern anytime you're Friday. Anytime any pitcher is scratched, we'll see what happens. As a Braves fan, I've got a silent tear going down my cheek right now for Spencer Strider being scratched and taken out of the game the other day. But also then Carson Wells gets scratched, and he's one of the guys that when you were mentioned earlier about how Andy Stanko's done a really good job of hovering over that line of when to play guys, when not to let guys get into a huge rut. He's a guy that struggled at times, but got it going. Like Andy Stanko's, I think, has done a really good job of not leaving him in the lineup all the time, but also, saying, hey, there's competition. These freshmen are going to get playing time if you don't start hitting. And he started coming around. And he's been a guy that's been producing and getting some clutch hits for them. So to see him not be in the lineup and be a late scratch is definitely a concerning thing for him, because he feels like one of the leaders on the team to me.
Yeah, I had one of that. I had that as my three down as well. I put senior health, but basically just it could be precautionary. We don't know yet, but to see Aoki and Wells scratched from games, it's not great. What I heard about Aoki is that he just felt something weird before the game. He went to the coaching staff, said, hey, I felt something, and I think they definitely wanted to be cautious. But the question is, will it be a long-term issue? And maybe we'll find out some answers as the week goes on. Wells had some kind of a hamstring tightness that he got scratched from the lineup on Saturday. They gave the lineup out late today because they were going through batting practice to see if he could play today, and they decided not to put him in the lineup. So read that how you will. But the fact that he was close to playing today makes you think it's probably not all that serious. But senior health is definitely one of my three down. The other two, I'll kind of go through them quickly because we've already talked about them. I kind of did a weird one, just said defined roles on the pitching staff. We've talked about Stromsburg and Hammond. They're really up in the air because I don't think Hammond's your Friday night starter going forward, but did he pitch well enough to get back in the rotation? Same thing can be said about Stromsburg. But I also think there's just a lot of flex guys that are performing well. Guys like a Michael Ebner, who struggled this weekend, but overall has been good this year. Fisher Johnson is back from injury. Those guys are giving you bulk innings out of the bullpen, kind of going multiple innings each time. And then Jared Fikus is a guy that's pitched well, but is he a reliever? Is he a starter? Same thing with William Watson. Maybe he's not a starter because he walks too many people, but the stuff is really good, and he has limited runs pretty well this season. So I would just say that one of the downs is just defined roles on the pitching staff, though I think that's made up for because I think they really do have defined roles in the lineup and the bullpen right now. And then my final three down, this is one kind of a joke, in-state stays. The Trojans have been in California since March 3rd when they came back from Globe Life. They will have to leave the state for the first time in over a month to go to Oregon this weekend.
Well, they better get their California passports ready for leaving the state or absolutely. Whatever. My other couple on three down, I mentioned the itching issues with the scratches they have. I still have some midweek concerns, and why that's important is because, like I mentioned before, the RPI knees report is you basically need to win every game. So you can't be like, well, we're winning and we're winning a series on the weekend and we get two games there and we drop the midweek and we go 2-2 overall for the week. If you're a top 25 team and you do that and you're playing SEC competition on the weekends, that's fine. Florida's done that a lot recently. But then when you slip up, like Florida did this week and they got swept by a terrible Missouri team, you're going to get dunked in the rankings. And for USC, they don't have that opportunity. And by rankings in this regard, I'm not referring to the top 25. You can't get dunked on in the RPI. So they have to take care of business in the midweek. And that's not something they've been consistently doing this season. So that's a concern for me. Yeah. And then part of that goes back to the pitching, guys bouncing back and forth and all the stuff we talked about. And then my other three down is, where's Brock? Where is Brock Blatter? Because we've talked about in the past, I think there's such potential for him. Now, I know you look at the stats, and I know some other guys have performed better. 10 walks in 8 innings, does have 14 strikeouts. But where has he been? We haven't seen him in a long time. Last time I saw him was on March 22nd against UCLA. Even before that, that he's had one outing in the last month. If they can add him back to the mix, get it figured out in bullpens, different things, I just think that adds such a different element because, you know, I remember talking at the beginning of the season, I was Caden Aoki. I talked to him after a game earlier in the season, and I was like, we're talking about different guys and new guys on the team. I was like, yeah, Brock Blatter. I was like, I'm interested to see what he can do. And I was like, I think there's more in the tank there. Like, he was throwing 92, 93 early against BYU. I think it was BYU or Grand Canyon. And he's like, and Caden goes, but those are 92 to 93 mile an hour cutters. He's like, everything he throws cuts. So, yeah, like, if he figures that out, like, that's just, that can be a dynamic weapon to add to the arsenal for USC, but you got to throw strikes.
Yeah, I mean, he had that stretch between the two Portland games and the Michigan game where he went five innings, didn't give up any runs, and struck out 12. 12 strikeouts in five innings. Since then, though, he's made four appearances. TCU, he got one out and walked two batters. Texas A&M, he didn't get an out and he walked two batters. Arizona, he got one out, but he walked two batters and gave up a hit and a run. And then UCLA, he got two outs, but walked a batter, gave up two hits, and gave up a run. He has been immune to getting outs recently when he come into games. And if you're counting it up, that is seven walks in 1.1 innings of outs worth that he's gotten over four appearances.
And if USC was in Oregon State spot right now, if they were 26-4, you go and throw him out there on a midweek and say, go make mistakes, go figure it out.
And our offense will probably still cover you.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Mazzana's going to hit three home runs, so it doesn't matter. And I told you, we didn't do a preview show or a show leading up to them playing Oregon State, and I told Jack, I was like, I'm still going to sing the praises of Travis Mazzana whenever we go on again.
He's the best player that I've seen so far this season.
Because that mofo is really, really good. And he's a delight to talk to. I don't know if you got a chance to during the series. If you didn't, you effed up there, Jack. Go talk to the opposing players as well. Get their opinion on what the Trojans. You might get some different insights there. But no, I talked to him early in the season about dealing with people knowing what his name is and people wanting autographs. I saw him at the very beginning of the season, they, like, for 30 minutes had to wait for him to sign autographs and stuff. Gracious with his time and everything. But he was such a delight. And the Australian accent, obviously, you know, puts it over
just
the
makes
top.
It, yeah, makes yeah. it all better.
But he's just dropping bombs like every other game because
to lead off every game, basically.
So the first 24 games of their season, he had hit six home runs to lead off for them. So it's not necessarily to lead off a game, but to the first inning, they're getting a run on one of their first two swings of the game.
A quarter of the time.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But he's been phenomenal for them. And I look forward to seeing him this weekend. Actually, I'm going to go up. I'm going to the Pacific Northwest. I will see USC there playing Oregon. I will see one of those games. I will also get my Bazana time in. I will see them playing. I think they're playing at Stanford off the top of my head. I'm going to go see one of USC's early opponents this year. I'm going to go see Portland. I'm going to go see Nick Brink because he has been a dude on Fridays, Portland's Friday starter. He struck out 12 one weekend. I think he struck out 14 one weekend. He has been outstanding for them. He's probably going to be the WCC pitcher of the year that USC already played this year. And then I will finish the weekend up in Washington, checking out, see what the Huskies have that USC were just able to sweep. Can they turn things around at all, you know, sitting at 3-9 in the Pac-12?
Yeah, they got to win a one-run game. They're 1-6 in one-run games. They're like early season USC right now. And I talked with one of the players who I was with over the summer, and he said, it's Grant Cunningham. He actually leads the Pac-12 in ERA, so it's cool to see him having a good season. But I asked him, are you guys struggling through this? Is the locker room lost? And he's like, no, we're just trying to fight through it right now. And I looked across. I'm like, those guys in the other dugout did this early in the year. They were in this exact same spot, and they turned it around. Maybe Washington can too. But no, Travis Bazzana was excellent. He honestly didn't even have a great series. USC pitched around him a lot. He made a couple errors. He got picked off twice, and still he was the best player on the field.
I just like that you called it a series. So if it's two games, it's a series, then, you know, two games, two wins must be a sweep there. So But no, he's a phenomenal talent. There's a ton of phenomenal talents in the Pac-12, and we'll continue to see them throughout. But with that, we're going to take a moment to pause and take a break. Jack and I are going to return with our special guest this week, the man calling the shots and getting the Trojans heading in the right direction, USC head coach Andy Stankiewicz.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. We expected someone else. So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We love those 5-star reviews. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you're putting the Dado download or the baseball pod in the headline to make sure it gets directed to Jack and I. You can even request for someone to be a future guest on the show, like we have this week in the head honcho, the manager, the shot caller, the lineup maker. We now welcome in our guest for the week, USC head coach Andy Stankiewicz. Andy, thanks for taking the time to join the Dado Download podcast.
Jack, shotgun, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we finally get to chat with you. We tried to get you a couple weeks ago, and you lost your voice. I feel like I'm losing mine a little bit now, so I'm going to blame this podcast if that's what happens. But we were able to get you on. We're excited to have you. Your Trojans are playing some great baseball, the best baseball they've played so far this season. You guys are coming off a big weekend sweep of Washington. And even before that, last weekend before, you play Oregon State and sweep them in a 2-game set. Jack and I had a philosophical debate about whether a 2 games should be considered a sweep or not. I said it was. He said, I don't know if you can count that. And we also debated it, and maybe we'll start with that. Were you disappointed to lose that game against Oregon State? Some people be like, hey, you get 2 and you'd be excited to get out of there with a 2-0 record against such a quality team. The way you guys have been playing, though, I think I thought that you guys probably looked at it as a missed opportunity because of that potential RPI boost that you get of playing a team like Oregon State, and feel like maybe we can go in there and take all 3 of them and just continue rolling the way you guys did that weekend to win a super tight game and then to blow them out in the second game. So, you know, let's start with that Oregon State weekend. What was working for you guys, and, you know, what was it like on Sunday when you can't get the game in because of some rain?
Well, Friday night was a great matchup. Two really good arms going at it, and Kanoki was fantastic and did what we needed him to do. He was a Friday night guy, and he's not, as you know, not particularly hard in the big fastball. But he pitches in all, basically all 4 quadrants, and he's got a good breaking ball, a good changeup, and so that was what we needed. And then we got a big knock out of the youngster, Braden Dowd. I think that just for him boosts confidence. And so, but I thought we played well on that Friday night. And I think more than anything else is just having the guys understand that Oregon State's obviously very good. They're very good. They're very skilled. They're well coached. They do everything really well. But if we play well, if we just play good brand of baseball, and it doesn't really matter who we're playing. If we do that well, we've got a chance. If we don't do it well, we don't have a chance. And so I think that's part of it. And then to come back on Saturday and really put some good swings on. And I know they didn't play particularly good defense and helped extend some innings, but you know, we take them. We got to, you know, we know where we're at, and it's pretty obvious. And so going into that series, we needed to do something. And so, I felt good about the first two. Obviously, yeah, I think we were playing well. And I guess there's some momentum shifts in the game in a weekend. And we certainly felt like we had it. Now, Oregon State wasn't going to come out on Sunday and go through the motions. And you've seen what they've done after, right? And so they're, you know, it wasn't going to be, but we certainly felt like we had a little momentum moving forward. And we would like to play, but obviously the rain came and it didn't go away for a while. And so we had to call Sunday. But yeah, we were in a good spot. We felt good about what we're going to, you know, our guy on the mound on that Sunday and what he was going to be able to do. But the weather wouldn't allow it.
I like that you mentioned momentum, because it kind of feels like in this 12-5 run that you guys are on, you're able to hold momentum, and that's something that wasn't happening early in the season. How have you gotten the guys to stack wins and not get complacent with just one or two wins, or just taking two out of the three in a series?
Well, I think we talked about, you know, just winning innings, just, you know, like a skins game. You know, it's like a golf skins game. Just win this inning, and then just win this next inning. Just win that. Okay, they won that inning. Okay, let's win this inning. And if you can minimize, you know, if you can keep the crooked numbers off the board and you win innings, you got a pretty good chance to win the ball game. I tell guys, you know, ones aren't going to beat us. Solo home runs aren't going to beat us. I guess they could if it was a walk off. So I know some would probably say, no, you're wrong, coach. I understand. I'm talking about solo home runs in the first inning, second inning, third inning. We're going to be fine. And so I think that's part of it. Just having that approach to the game. Like, it's not, everything's important. Everything's different. Let's just try to win the inning, and then let's see what the next inning brings. Let's see what the next inning brings. And I think we've been able to kind of compartmentalize a little bit better in that respect. And then when they score, because they were scoring some big runs early against us in the season. There's a lot of crooked numbers up there. And so we're like, okay, they won that inning. All right, let's minimize. Let's get a two instead of a four or instead of a five. And then if we do that, then we talk about answering back. It's been a big rally cry in the dugout. You know, when they score, we got to answer back. When we score, we have a shutdown. So it's just been this, and the guys are, you hear them verbalizing it as well in the dugout. You hear them shouting out, come on, we've got to answer back. We've got to punch back. We hear them, hey, we've got to, it's a shutdown. Come on, man. We need to shut down here. Let's go. So I just think as a whole unit, guys are just kind of aware of the game and the situation that we're in at that moment, and doing the best, even the non-starters doing a good job of really locking in, focusing in on us winning that particular inning.
Yeah, early in the season, the shutdown innings in particular, you guys would score and then immediately give up runs right back. You know, that was a big bugaboo for you. And it just felt like the execution wasn't there. But that's been something both on both sides of the mound and the plate, where when you do get some runs, you get that shutdown inning because you execute pitches the next inning. And if you give up a run, you do answer back because you guys have been able to execute moving guys over and doing all the small ball things that you need to do, as well as getting some big hits. What has been the key to making that shift in execution that wasn't there early in the season? Was there something you could point to that has helped you guys make that change? Or is it just guys are starting to do what you ask them to do a little bit more?
I think both. Shotgun, I think guys are starting to buy into what Coach Jewett talks about all the time, and Jenks, just driving home the philosophy of staying in the middle of the diamond and being short to the ball and getting through the baseball, staying inside it. And so I think they're starting to kind of understand. I think, quite honestly, I think Gallo's success has helped us, because, you know, Gallo's not big, strong, you know, big physical looking guy, but he's obviously get a really good swing, and I think they're starting to go like, well, here's the smallest guy on our team, and he leads our team in home runs, and he's probably our best offensive player right now. And he wasn't, and no disrespect to him, he wasn't a very good offensive player last year. It was a different swing. And so, and now he's having success. And now I think that it kind of gives Travis and Jenks and, hey, man, some credibility. Like, hey, not that they don't think that Coach Jewett and Coach Jenks know what they're talking about, but everybody has their way. Everybody has their dad who was their hitting guy. Let's tell them one thing. He has the hitting guy in this lab in some hidden cave somewhere that he's been working with. And so this is what my guy tells me to do. And so I just think it just took some of that, just kind of trusting Coach and letting him kind of help them. I think it sounds weird as it sounds. They know that Coach Jewett's in the foxhole with them, but at the same time, it's like you're still apprehensive about making some changes. And we've told them more than once, like, offensively, if you continue to do the same things, you're going to continue to be the same player. So it's just, but that's scary to them. That's because that means for a moment, I've got to give myself up to somebody else, and that makes them nervous, right? And so, I think that's a part of the trust. And I think the other part of it is that we've really worked on that part of the game more. We've seen that we're not going to be, unfortunately, we're not going to be a, you know, big doubles all the time, a lot of home runs team. We just don't have that physicality yet, and we hope to as we kind of can move the program forward. But so I think that we've worked on that a lot, moving runners over, getting runners in, you know, sacrifice bunting, base hit bunting. If you saw our BP yesterday, and it's slash and run, it's push bunt, drag bunt, right? It's moving right over, get guys in. So I think we're emphasizing BP is not just you sit at home plate and just try to get home runs during batting practice. BP has to have a purpose. And I think that Coach Dewitt's done a great job of making sure that if they have a bad swing and they're supposed to move a guy over, you're out of the cage. Next. So sometimes they're supposed to have around a five and they have around a one. That's on them. I said, get him out of the cage. Get him out. Sit. Next. Who's next? And so if you want to do it right, then you're going to get a lot of swings for BP. If you want to just do it incorrectly, your BP may be four or five swings and next group comes in. That's on you, man. If you want to do it right, then you're going to get plenty of swings. If you don't want to do it well, the way we're asking you to do it, then you're going to have a really short batting practice.
To dive into Galloway for a second, he had the batting average last year, but what's impressed me this season is you see the power tick up. He's walking a lot more. I think he only had three walks last year, but something he's really improved. As you've watched from the dugout, how impressed have you been with the step that he's taken? And what do you feel like allowed him to take that next step?
Well, I think he's learning how to hit. He's learning how to he has the ability to go the other way, right? If you watch him hit, he stays in the middle really well. He goes to left center gap, you know, left field line really well. But now he's learning how to get the ball in some nice pull side backspin, and that's been the difference. And that's the matter of getting the ball a click more out in front and getting inside it and through it. And next thing you know, you got good backspin on the pull side, and you got a chance to hit off the wall or maybe even a home run, which he's done. So I think he's just learning himself, learning his swing, he's learning how to trusting his plant, the plate, and you know what this guy's his pitch is and what his strengths are, and understanding, hey, there may be this is a situation where I might see this. And he gets it and he's on it. He's ready to go. And so he just committed to his plan, and his swing has gotten inside and through as good as anybody on the team. It's short and inside. It's not front side fly out and try to hit a home run. It's kind of the old school. Get in the hitting zone, stay flat to the hitting zone, and try to hit line drives. And so it seems to be working for him.
Another guy when he's hitting line drives is at his best, Austin O'Vern. You talked early in the season about if you hit ground balls to second base, it doesn't matter how fast you are. You're going to get out every time, basically. Where have you seen his swing progress? And it feels like when he gets going, especially from the leadoff spot, everything else kind of falls into place. What did it take for him to earn back that leadoff spot after you had moved him down the lineup early with him struggling?
Well, I was just trying to, you know, he was struggling. So it wasn't like people were like, hey, man, I can't believe Austin O'Vern is hitting ninth. So we obviously haven't been coming to our games. And so, I should have been batting him ninth at that moment. But maybe for him, it was just kind of like a a refresh button. Like, okay, I'm not leading off the game. There's no pressure. I just can just kind of just wait my turn, and the game's already moving. Maybe he's made a couple of nice plays in the outfield. By the time the third inning rolls around or whatever, and now I just kind of just more at ease. And so, but there was never our intent to keep him there. It just, I needed him to just exhale for a moment. And but at the same time, I needed him to know that you're just not going to be a leadoff guy at SC. You're just having poor at bats. It's just, there's a responsibility here. It's an obligation to have good at bats. And so I just want him to know that he's not going to hand him a leadoff spot at USC just because he can run fast. That's not going to work. And so so I think he's understood that, and he's starting to use the middle of the field better. His batting practice is better. He's bunted more. He's gotten a couple push bunts and drags. And I just don't think that that's been a comfortable part of his game. It's like he wants to hit, and I got it. But he has to learn that the part of his game is he's got some nice line drives the other way. Recently, mm-hmm. and he's gotten the ground ball to where shortstop would have been playing, but everybody plays him in a shift. And so, but he's also grounded first base a ton too. So I'm not, it isn't like totally become this, you know, this Hall of Famer. But he's gotten better, absolutely. And so, but that's still not enough. I mean, he's still got to continue to get better, and he will. He's a worker. But he's got trusted as well. He's just, everybody wants to hit home runs. And here's the problem. But he can hit a home run. He's strong. He's got some whip to his barrel. And when he gets it out front, the ball will jump pretty good. He hit one this weekend. Doesn't surprise me, I mean, at all. I mean, he should lead our team in home runs. He's getting the most at bats. So you get the most at bats. And if you like to pull the ball, you're probably gonna hit some home runs. Now you gotta pull the ball in the air. So I think that's part of it too, is learning how to backspin a ball to the pull side. And that's a trained art, especially for those high school kids that come from trainers that teach them to swing, you know, drop the back shoulder and swing up. They don't understand getting inside the baseball, staying flat to the zone is going to create backspin. This swing creates topspin. It's like a tennis player, right? It's topspin. Topspin, that means it's going to go this way. We want backspin. It's going to get into the air. So we unfortunately in the game of baseball have a lot of baseball players that should be playing tennis, not playing baseball. And so but he's understanding, he's starting to figure it out. So that's why he's back at the top. If we're gonna go, and I think I told you this earlier, if we're gonna be in the middle of this thing to the very, very end, Austin O'Vern has to be our leadoff hitter. He has to be. Yeah, that's our shot. If he's not, then it's going to be tough. But again, at the same time, I'm not just going to give him a leadoff spot. He's got to earn it.
Overall, it feels like since we've last talked with you, the lineup did go over a bunch of changes, evolutions, guys moving up and down. But now it kind of seems like you figured out, at the very least, 1 through 6, the combination of the puzzle. What kind of gave you that clarity that you seem to have now, penciling in the same guys, the same positions, and same spots in the order?
Well, you have to put him there. It wasn't very good. So you start kind of just like, honestly, there's moments that where you're like, damn, I don't know really where to go with this lineup. But you just kind of put some guys here, there, and you hope that they figure it out. And I think, you know, those three guys, O'Vern, Galloway, Jackson, or Jackson, or O'Vern, Jackson, Galloway, and that three is what we need. And then Dow's done a really nice job in his role. Shoot, he's, you know, his credit, he's gotten some opportunities. He's got some the weekend at Stanford. We threw him out there, and he did what you're supposed to do. If you want to keep playing, you have to perform when you get a chance to play, and he did that. And so that's what's given him a chance to get back on the field on a consistent basis and show his skill set. So, you know, he's not your prototypical four. We don't have any prototypicals here, so we don't we really don't. I mean, I've let off Galloway. O'Vern, I guess that would be a prototypical, but after that, it's like, we really don't have so doubt is, but he puts the ball in play and he's competitive. He doesn't seem to be rattled when they bring a lefty in. And that's big for us to see a young left-handed hitter not be rattled by a left-handed, because a lot of left-handed hitters see a left-handed pitcher and they start getting hives, right? They're like, I can't handle lefties. I'm not good at letting them. He's fine. Though he's shown to be competitive. Hedges is moving well, starting to swing the bat better. He got a couple of triples the other day on some hanging breaking balls. So it's good to see that he's moving well. And in Wells, he's doing it's like, it's just everyone's, we're more competitive up and down the lineup. You know, early in the year, it was basically Jacob Galloway. That was it. And then after that, you're like, you have to wait till Jacob Galloway comes back up again. but now it's like, okay, we're more formidable, I guess, up and down the lineup, which is what everybody wants. So
you talked about Dowd. You know, early in the season, before the season, when we talked to you, you were excited about freshmen like Takeuchi, Covarrubias. Those guys have been kind of mainstays in the lineup. But we've seen guys like Carpentier, Dowd, Garen Rizzo, those guys that weren't as talked about early in the season, but they've gotten some opportunities because of the struggles early in the year, and they've made the most of it. What have you learned about that group of freshmen as they've taken those opportunities and ran with them?
No, you learn that they're competitive, man. And they want to play. They came here to play. They want to be on the field. And people ask all the time, right? Check in. Hey, my son's a freshman. Is he going to get a chance to play? And I'm like, yeah, it's up to him. I want to win games. And so if you looked at our lineup right now, right, you see a lot of freshmen in on the field. Now, next year, because they play a lot as freshmen, doesn't mean they're going to play a lot of sophomores, because hopefully we've got freshmen that are going to come in here and they want to play. And so, again, that's up to them. But these guys have, those guys you mentioned, Carpentier, Rizzo, right? Kova and who am I missing?
Takeuchi?
Yeah, Tak. They've come in and they perform well, and they've shown us every reason to put them back on the field, and they'll go through their moments and we'll have to make some decisions, but they've done a really good job of being competitive. They seem to have gotten better. You know, that's when you get kicked around a little bit early, you lose confidence, and then you kind of go, hey man, am I good enough to play? I don't care what level. I don't care if you're going from high school to college to the minor leagues to the big leagues. You're always like, when you get beat up a little bit, you can kind of like start to, some doubt and fear can jump in, but they've responded with strong mentality, and they're not afraid. And so that's a big thing, man. That's what we're looking for. So are you afraid? If you're afraid, we're in trouble and it ain't gonna work. If you're okay with failing and you can deal with it and you can go back and get ready for the next at bat or next pitch, you're going to, every coach in America, that's what we're looking for. And so those guys have provided that. They've shown us that they're, you know, Dean Carpentier, I don't even get a home run in high school last year. I don't know. I look at his stats. But he's a shortstop by trade, right? And he comes in and I'm like, hey man, can you play some first base? And put a first baseman's glove on him, and he's done a really nice job over there. And we got two home runs this weekend. He's learning how to turn a baseball and get some good backspin on the full side. And so he's big and he's strong. And so, hey, to his credit, man, he's put the work in and he's shown that they can handle it. So we'll keep running him out there.
Well, my favorite moment from the weekend is when, even after he hit the home run, you guys still have him sack bunt the next time up and say, hey, even though you can hit a homer, no one's immune. You've still got a bunt.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to hit a home run in high school and think you're going to go back-to-back home runs against UW, that's a long shot. We're not going to be able to pull that one off. So Trav did the right job, right thing. Put the bud down, and we're good.
One thing that I was curious to ask you about, with Jewett taking over as the third base coach, what kind of went into that decision?
Well, I think part of it is frees me up to talk with Seth. Because when you're on the diamond or in the field giving signs and working the offense, you're trying to get to second base. You're trying to figure out a way to get to second base to get in the scoring position. You're trying to figure out, you know, who's coming up and what we need to do here. And so I think number one is freed me up to be really have a better line of communication with Seth, because I think, you know, one of the toughest things to do for us is making the right decisions on when to go to the bullpen. And who's the right guy to bring out of the bullpen. And so what it's allowed me to do with Seth is like have a dialogue prior in the middle of the inning, because I know Travis is on point with the offense. I can now have a good line of communication working with Seth. Like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? Whereas if I'm out in the third base box, I come back in, we're starting the inning, and now we're kind of behind a little bit on making a decision on who we should have thought about possibly coming in. And so that's part of it. Another part of it was I can talk baseball in the dugout with the hitters, kind of what I see, right? And the other part is like Travis is really good. He's really good at his job. He's always been really good at his job. And it frees him up to and I'm like, we'll talk about some decisions that may be coming the next inning, like, hey, what we want to do. But I tell him all the time, man, if you got a feeling, you got a gut, go, man. I don't second guess my coaches at all. Never have. I won't do it. What we do is hard. I think that's what people lose sight of. It's hard to win baseball games. It's not easy. And so so I trust him 100%. And again, but now it's freeing me up to be give me some flexibility to be back in the dugout.
The offense has gotten going. You've gotten some consistency out of guys, and the lineup is slowly lengthening a little bit. The other side, though, on the pitching mound, it hasn't been consistent. You're getting some good results, but you've changed up the weekend rotation. You took Stromsborg out, put him in the midweek, and suddenly you got him going a little bit. You take Hammond out of the weekend rotation, and he steps up. When you have to scratch Caden Aoki late, how are you guys having the success without having that consistency? And what would you like to see as the staff kind of shakes out as the season progresses? Do you want to get those two guys back in the weekend rotation? Are you happy with what you got right now? And then I guess also we got to ask about the status of Caden Aoki after he was scratched late.
Right, Caden's gonna be fine. He had a little shoulder stiffness. Just felt like he had some of that, and I think at his previous school he was at, and so he just got a little spooked, which we get. And so we decided, it's probably best just to back off right now. But we anticipate him being fine for the weekend. So there's that one. Again, I think that Stromsborg would tell you, Eric Hamm would tell you, that they didn't deserve to be pitching more on the weekend. Now they and they understood it, and they were, but we knew that. Now for us to, again, kind of like over on the top of the lineup, we sure would love for Aoki, Stromsborg, and Hammond to be the three. But sometimes a guy needs a little wake-up call. It's interesting. It's like if a guy doesn't play well offensively for three games, I don't start him for a fourth game. Or if he doesn't play well for two games, I probably don't start him for the third game. So, like, why do we continue to give the same guys the baseball on a weekend if they're not performing at the level we need to perform? And so that was my discussion with Seth. And it's like, hey, man, I think it's time to make a change. And maybe it's a kick in their butt to where, like, hey, man, maybe they took it for granted. Maybe they're willing now to listen to Seth and try something different because they want to get back on the weekend. Stromsborg was really good. You know, Ficus wasn't very good this weekend. I think he went two innings. So we got to make a decision. Stromsborg, is he ready to jump back in the rotation the weekend? And Ficus out. Watson was just okay yesterday. He got through some jams, but he walked a lot of guys. This is stuff I'm saying to you, but all you got to do is look at the box score. So it's like, it's pretty obvious to anybody that watches the game that Watson's got a propensity to walk people. Look at his numbers. Like, if he doesn't walk people, he's got a chance to pitch a lot more. Hey, man, hopefully we can get him moving this weekend. I'm not tipping my hand. I don't know what we're going to do this weekend. It's Monday after a weekend, so we got some time to figure it out. We would love to see Stromsborg and Hammond back in there, and maybe this was what they needed to wake them up a little bit, shake it, so they show us and they want to get back and pitch. Or maybe they like that role. Shotgun. Our job is to find the right role for the guys to where they feel comfortable. You'd be shocked at how many, when you look up in the lineup and you see – when I bat guy six, they're hitting 360. When I bat them second, they're hitting 210. Some guys like being in the back there. They just feel more comfortable. Some guys like being relievers. It's like, there's no pressure. Some guys don't like the pressure of a weekend. I don't know. That's our job to find out who wants those roles and who can step up. And maybe we leave those guys out of the rotation. We just, kind of start a reliever, and then just go by a committee on one of these days this weekend. I'm not sure yet. I don't like that, but if that's going to give us the best shot to win, then we'll certainly do it.
Well, I don't envy your position having to make those decisions, but I'm sure you'll figure it out. We've got one question to close it out, but before that, I have to ask you, can you describe the moment that you told Eric Hammond he had to start the game, like a couple minutes before first pitch?
Well, it was one of those. I think the umpires just come out of the umpires room and they walked in the home plate and says, "Hey, man, Kane's a little sore in the shoulder, a little stiffness, nothing major, I don't think, but he's a little stiff." So I said, "Well, go talk to him and find out how he's doing. And if not, if you can't go, it's got to be Hammond." And he said, "Yep." So just kind of looked at me, thumbs down, and said, "All right, get Hammond going." Now, this may have been the best thing for Eric Hammond, because Eric on his starts, he's like a lot of guys, I guess, the start. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of pregame preparation routine that goes into his starts. And so one of the things we've been trying to help him grow as an athlete is like, those are great, but you don't need those things to have success. The success is here. It's in your mind. It's your ability to visualize and understand what you have to do and repeat the delivery and the pitches when you execute them. It's not because you did the weighted ball thing for 15 minutes down the lane, right? Or all those things. Certainly, I'm not saying that they're meaningless, because they are, but he's that guy, right? And so now all of a sudden, Eric, we threw him on the mound, Seth threw him the baseball and said, "Get hot, get your arm moving. You're starting this game. You got to be done in 6 minutes." And he pitched one of his best games of the year. So hopefully, and I'm not saying next time Eric starts, he doesn't do anything until 5 minutes before the game. No. But I'm just saying hopefully he's understanding that you're successful because you believe in yourself. And you're confident, you're strong, your mind is healthy. Now, if you feel like you've got to do all of these extra things to be successful, then it becomes about that. Not about you, about your ability, your skill set, right? I'm controlling my destiny, not whether or not I had enough time to throw a ball off a wall, right? And get hot. And so I think it may, in the end of the day here, it may be one of the best things that's ever happened to him. We'll see.
So now you're not going to tell him anymore when he's starting until 5 minutes before the game. All right, you're in. All right, we decided it's going to be you.
It's not a bad idea. Maybe we'll start something new.
Well, Andy, we really appreciate the time and wish you guys the best of luck. A huge week this week. You play UC Irvine, last game in Los Angeles, and then you go to Oregon, a big weekend there, and then a couple of big win weeks next week as well. So a big stretch for you guys. You're playing great baseball. We're loving to see that, and we'll see what you guys can do. But we really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the Dado Download podcast.
You got it, fellas. Pleasure, always. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks so much to Andy Stankiewicz for being super flexible, working with us to be able to jump on the podcast this week. We really appreciate him. All the coaches we've had from the USC staff, as well as the players that take the time to join us, we really appreciate them. It's always awesome to be able to talk to them and get their insight.
Yeah, and it's cool to just be able to talk with them about anything, whether it's the games or anything. And you know, without us having a podcast the last couple of weeks, I've had a couple of players, people on the staff be like, "Oh, where was the podcast this week? We missed it." And I'm like, sorry, Shotgun and I couldn't coordinate a time. And I felt bad. I'm like, "Well, they want a podcast. We got to do a podcast."
Yeah, I love it. I love when the parents of the players, hey, I love when you guys come up and when I'm in town and see us. Love that as well. And the fans, you know, that we've been getting emails from as well. Remember, you can always email us, you know, your questions, concerns. We love to hear from you guys. We've had some emails in the past. We do not have one this week, but email us at
podcast@uscfootball.com.
Yeah, I don't have it right in front of me, so it's bouncing all over the place. podcast@uscfootball.com. Email us. Make sure that you're putting Dado Download in the podcast, or the Baseball Pod, or Jack and that other guy, or whatever it may be. The old guy with the beard and the baby face, you know, figure it out. You're somewhere in there. But we love to hear from you guys, and we love when we hear from you guys at games and stuff as well when I'm out. I really appreciate that. If anyone's going to Eugene this weekend, look for me on Saturday. I will be there. I will be roaming around, shooting some photos and stuff as well. Stop me, say hello, chat with me. Love it. I'm all about that action. Let's move forward that. I talk about I'm going to Eugene this weekend, Jack. I don't know why you're not coming. I don't understand. What's going on?
I'm going to take my weekend off. Stuff going on behind the scenes. I do have to go to school every now and then. Guess I'll do some assignments. I'm not looking forward to it, but I'll be there on Tuesday. But I'm not looking forward to focusing on school this week, but I have to do it.
Let's start with that. USC will play in the midweek before they head to Oregon. I believe this is the last game in Los Angeles. Is that correct, Jack? I have to look that one up. I know I've seen that thrown around a couple of times. But
are you not counting? I mean, I assume you're not counting Orange County. Like, you're not saying that counts as Los Angeles?
That's not Los Angeles.
I know. I'm just making sure.
Orange County. I'm talking about Los Angeles County.
At Page, I believe this is the last game at Page Stadium, yes.
So there you go. If you do not have something to do on Tuesday, get your ass over to Westchester. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. Go over there, get some food, and then go to the game at George Pace Stadium. The Mikos Blue Monster is out there in left field. It's a fun stadium. Go out. You are right on top of the players. Like, it's not like you're far away. Go out and enjoy the last game in LA. This is the last chance to see them close up if you don't live in Orange County. Go out and see them against a really, really good team in UC Irvine. This is going to challenge USC very much, just like the Oregon State series did on the weekend. UC Irvine is coming off a series win over UC Santa Barbara. They're the biggest challenger in the Big West. I believe they are 24-4 now, if I remember off the top of my head. They are an elite team. They are also the team, along with USC, they got left off the bubble last year when both teams probably should have been in. Both teams definitely should have been in over Arizona, but I digress. We'll get to that in a different state. We've mentioned it before. But UC Irvine is a really good program. The coaching staff there with Ben Orloff and Daniel Bobona have been at work through under Mike Gillespie. They're tremendous guys, tremendous staff, and they have produced probably their best team since they took over the program with Anthony Martinez at first base. You got Caden Kendall got drafted last year and decided, I'm going to come back to school because I think we have something special. Their weekend starters are really good, even though they lost a big-time arm before the season. But they've been really good this season. They just find ways to win. So this is a challenge for USC. They got to go up against this team, but they have it as a quote home game.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't exactly count. It is closer to home than Orange County, that's for sure. But the closest to home USC played this season was against UCLA. And I find it funny, Shotgun, that series, it's the only time the players have gotten to sleep in their own beds for a weekend baseball game or for a series. But you mentioned it. UCI is a very talented team. They've got three regulars in the batting order with OPSs over 1,000. That would be Anthony Martinez, Caden Kendall, and Joe Oyama. Woody Hay-Dean is up there at 961. Thomas McCaffrey's at 921. It's a team that hits 313 as a group. This is a team that it's going to slice you many different ways. It could be one guy one game, another guy another game, but it is a midweek, so we'll see. It's always up in the air. Team 3.84 ERA. I mean, Shotgun, we're talking about one of the 15 best teams in the country. They're ranked right now at number 14, but after the UCSB win, could go up. This is one of the best teams in the country, and it'll be a tough task for USC, but it is on the road. It is a midweek. Things are up in the air. The Trojans this season have played better on the weekend than in midweeks. And I think one of the things they struggled with early in the year in that 3-11 start, I think it was their first 9 losses came to different teams. It was some crazy number where they didn't lose to a team a second time. It was all to individual teams. I think they're better when they see a team multiple times or when they have time to maybe develop a bigger scouting report when you're planning on playing 3 games. Something about the start of the season with three losses to 3 different teams in Arizona. Then you come back, you lose a game to Portland, and then they had TCU and Texas A&M. Like, they had so many individual losses at the beginning of the season that maybe that is what makes the midweeks harder, because I think this is a group that learns as they play teams multiple times.
Yeah, and this team you're going to have to learn right away because they're going to throw multiple arms at them during the midweek. And they're quality arms, but there's nothing necessarily special about the guys that they're going to face. So they can go out and get some hits they can produce against them. But the question is, can they execute as well as UC Irvine? That is what separates UC Irvine right now is they have talent. They have talent. We talked about some of those guys that you mentioned. You know, their weekend starters. Nick Pinto has started like something like 60-something games in college. Like, that's hard to do these days. You know, well, not necessarily these days, but it's hard to do overall. And because of the COVID year and whatnot, he has started a shit ton is probably the accurate measurement there. But he's started a number of games. Trevor Hansen's been really good for them. Brandon Liu was really good today. You know, we're recording this on a Sunday against UC Santa Barbara to lock up that series in a rubber match. But they have other options in the bullpen. Midweek is going to be different. You're going to see guys for one or two innings. But it's about execution. That's why they've been so good. They don't give games away. They don't commit six errors in a game. They force you to beat them, and they are really good at doing all the small things. And they played throughout this season with a chip on their shoulder of how dare you not put us in the tournament last year, which is one of the things that I was really disappointed with USC early in the season. And we could discuss if we want at some point about, you know, I've had people tweeting at us and on the message boards, why did they start so slow? What happened? How could they be so bad early? Talk about the, you know, field, and we talk about all these different things. USC didn't play with that chip on their shoulder that UC Irvine has played this entire season with.
Maybe they were trying too hard, too. I felt like Andy Stankiewicz kind of mentioned they were putting too much pressure on themselves, where it's not really a chip, it's more pressure.
Yeah, definitely could be, and that's especially for the older guys that are draft years and, you know, are expected to produce and then start immediately start tensing up a little bit and going and whatnot. But UC Irvine, they've just rolled with it. And, you know, give a lot of credit to their coaching staff. I love their coaching staff. They're great guys. And they've been phenomenal so far this season. And, you know, it's going to be a tough win. But if you get that win, that is another big RPI boost. And DSR, if you want to look at that metric on our D1 baseball site, you know, the Diamond Sports Ranking, if the committee ever decides to use that as well, this would be a big win for USC in that regard. And then real quick, back to Nick Pinto, 59 career appearances, 54 starts. That's crazy.
That is a lot of starts. I would assume that Garen Rizzo will get the start for USC on Tuesday against UCI. They kind of got through this weekend using a lot of guys out of the bullpen. They got him warming up, but they didn't have to use him today as William Watson was able to go nearly five innings. So I would assume that he's the one that will make the midweek start. And we've seen him make plenty this season.
Also really big, I believe it was it Saturday start, Mason Edwards.
Yep.
Who had been the midweek starter. Inning in the third, one hit, two Ks. Thought that was really big for him and his potential development to maybe you throw him back in, maybe not necessarily as a starter, but, you know, Rizzo gives you three innings. Edwards comes in and gives you three or can give you two or whatever. Like, he can be a big impact guy in the midweek after struggling at times in the midweek this season.
Yeah, I think we'll see those two piggyback and a combination. And if USC gets the lead, you'll see Martinez for two and Blum for one, as we've talked about many times today. Then the Trojans go, and over the weekend, they will play Oregon, a team that is close to the top of the Pac-12, as we mentioned earlier, 22-8 overall, coming off a series win over UCLA, and another group that Shuckin has gotten it done offensively and on the mound so far this season. Oregon has got a lot of good pieces.
Yeah, definitely. And the biggest thing about Oregon is they replaced pieces they lost. They had some big pieces they lost from Sabine Ceballos, the third baseman, from Riku Nishida, their 5'6 center fielder last year, who was just a spitfire. He was amazing to talk to last year. I got a chance in the Pac-12 tournament, and Mark Wasikowski, who's the head coach there, I know him pretty well, and he was like, you got Riku's the man. I love him, everything about him. So they've replaced those pieces. They've gone on the transfer portal. They've gotten some big guys to come back. One of those is Casella, I think his name is Justin Casella from Elon. He's been a contributor for him. He's batting 286, 5 homers, 19 RBIs. But the big one that has been, to me, has been Jeffrey Hurd, who came from Sacramento State. I loved him at Sacramento State. I was a little disappointed when he decided to transfer to Sacramento State because I love seeing those guys that are impact guys staying at the mid-major level at the UC Irvines, the Cal State Fullertons, because I cover all those teams. I want them to be successful, too, for D1 baseball. I cover them. Jeffrey Hurd has been really good for Oregon. He's batting 358, only 3 homers, but 22 RBIs. He can lead the ballpark. He's got 13 doubles. He's leading the team there. He hasn't struck out a ton. And that was something early in his career. He struck out a little bit too much. There was some swing and miss there, but they've corrected that. He's been really good. Drew Smith as a sophomore has been really good for him. So, you know, their lineup can rake. You know, they have guys in there. Well, let me take that back. Their lineup can hit really well. I wouldn't put them quite in the rake category just yet. They've got guys that can hit really well. And also, there was a really cool occurrence over this weekend when they played UCLA. Because their center fielder, Bryce Betcher, who's made a number of web gems, diving catches, throwing guys out. He threw a guy out on Sunday against UCLA. But Bryce Betcher was on second base. He got picked off. He got picked off by another linebacker because John Vons was pitching. Tyler Vons' little brother, who's a linebacker on the football team, is also a two-way guy on the baseball team, was pitching and picked off Bryce Betcher, who is a linebacker on the Oregon football team as well. So that was really interesting. You know, a linebacker on linebacker violence there with a pickoff at second base.
Yeah, on the baseball field.
Yeah.
Yeah, Betcher's hitting well this season. He's above 302. The Ducks as a team hitting 293. So another team that you would say on the full season is having a better overall offensive year than USC. If you look at some of the conference numbers too, Oregon holds up, but the batting average is 226 in Pac-12 play, so the offense has slowed down a little bit. Some of the guys like a Jeffrey Hurd hitting just 250 in the Pac-12, his average is well above 300 if you look at the full season number. So it is definitely not a team that USC can't go and beat. The question I think is going to rise again, Chuck, and how will USC play on the road? Because they started pretty well on the road this year. In neutral site games, they've been horrendous, and that's really where the slow start happened, was a lot of the neutral site games at Globe Life and in Arizona. But they won the road series against Stanford. They came close to the road series win against UCLA, but then dropped the next two. So they really are going on the road for a series for the first time since then, and they haven't gone out of the state in quite some time. So they haven't really been on the road. Like, they've been on the road, but they haven't really been on the road. And now I'm really curious to see how they're going to handle it, because that's what slowed their momentum down last year. They won all these home games. They'd go on the road and they'd get swept, and it felt like they'd come back. And it's like, where does this team still stand? That question is being raised again. And finally, Shotgun, that we go back to the question we had before the year, which is, what's the road going to look like for a team that struggled so much last year? Instead of talking about, oh, they're 3-11. What is this team? Everything that's going on. We're finally back to the original question from the preseason.
Yeah, and it's a big challenge going to Oregon. One, because their fans will get behind them, especially playing against USC. They've had tremendous fan support, and you know, when they were in the regional and super regional last year. And then I think they're a team that really matches up well against other teams. So, you know, they're starting pitching. RJ Gordon, Grayson Grinzel are quality guys. Grinzel was really good lefty as a freshman last year. But then they brought in a transfer, Kevin Sider from, I believe, Quinnipiac. And he is just, to have him on Sundays is such a luxury, because he's like a fifth-year guy. He's thrown like 7,000 innings in his career. And he just, on Sunday, he doesn't get rattled. He's going to give you consistent effort. And his ERA is at 5 right now, 5.02, which is kind of the college average. But he's 4-1 because he's going to give you that on Sunday, and the offense is going to beat up your Sunday guy. And then they're going to turn the ball over in the bullpen. Then they got, you know, quality guys like Michael Friend, Logan Mercado at the back end, who's kind of mix and match. Bradley Mullen, a transfer from Gonzaga, is a lefty matchup guy that's been really good this season. And then I haven't even mentioned their number one prospect, who's their first baseman, Jacob Walsh, who Mark Wazikowski told me before the season, he's like, he could have the most power in the country. Him and Dominic Hellman, who's also on the team, he said, these two guys, these might be the two best power hitters in the Pac-12, and they play the same position on the same team. Now, Hellman has not done much this season, you know, because he hasn't got consistent at bats, because Walsh has 10 homers and has driven in 31 runs, has been one of the better power hitters in the Pac-12. And he's taken a step, because last year he was hitting like 230, 240 most of the season. This year he's hitting 284. So he's a dynamic weapon from the left side in that lineup.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to see what will USC get over the weekend from the starting rotation, because if Caden Aoki can't go, now who's USC starting on Friday? Can Tyler Stromsburg turn it around in time to maybe be a Friday guy? Do you move up a Jared Fikus, who was a Sunday guy 2 weeks ago, then he was the Saturday guy this week, and now is he the Friday guy for you after being a reliever, the closer to start the season? If Caden Aoki comes back, that answers a lot of questions, but if he doesn't, it is going to be a very interesting game notes drop when we find out who the three starters are going to be for USC on the road at Oregon.
Yeah, and this isn't a make or break weekend, because you're kind of so far in the hole right now that there is no such thing as a make or break weekend, because you kind of need to win 90% of your games the rest of the way. So nothing is a make or break, in my opinion. But this will tell us a lot. This could be a big boost weekend for them. They lose a series, it's not like suddenly they're out and they were in before or whatever. But if they win the series, or if somehow they even sweep, you start going, uh-oh, we got to start paying outside of this podcast. You know, I start talking to my D1 guys and be like, oh, you better start paying attention to the Trojans, because it seems like they're back in the mix here, even though they're, you know, that early season resume is going to hurt them bad. But that those are the type of things that can get them back on the map, at least to be in contention. You know, this is a big opportunity, and that's how they have to look at it. Like, ooh, we get an opportunity to go to PK Park. We're going to go there. I haven't looked at the weather. Hopefully it's good since I'm going to be in town. But we get to go to PK Park. There's going to be some fans there. Let's go show out, and let's go make an impact and help our resume for the season.
Yeah, I would say a series loss won't undo the positives that have been built over the past couple of weeks, but a series win can really compound that, and you could start to get on a really big streak here as the season goes on.
And also, they are tied currently with Oregon in the standings for third, behind Oregon State, behind Arizona. Those two teams are tied half game above USC and Oregon. So, you know, win a series, you know, bumps you up at least there, and you sweep a series and suddenly you might be in first place, that type of thing. So we'll see how they do. This is a big challenge for them, and one of the bigger challenges remaining on the schedule, considering they've already played Arizona, who's in, you know, tied for first place, and they've already beaten Oregon State, who's tied for first place. So outside of Utah, who's a team that's played really well, you know, this is probably the biggest challenge remaining on the schedule.
Yeah, and it's maybe the second hardest week that USC will have when you combine the midweek and the weekend. That week where they had to play Michigan and then play, obviously, TCU twice and Texas A&M once. Looking back, that was very difficult. But, you know, you're facing one of the top teams in the Pac-12, and in the midweek, you're facing one of the top teams in the country.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, is this going to be, you know, are we going to be like, should we even podcast next week? Or should we be like, we got a podcast next week to talk about what this team just did? And it doesn't get easier, because next week they got to play San Diego. They got to play Irvine in the midweek as well. And both those teams are rolling right now. And we already mentioned Irvine, but San Diego is really playing well right now too. So we'll see. It's a big week for USC. You know, they took care of business against Washington. Can you continue to build on it? That's the biggest question. And, you know, that's what we talked about Andy Stankiewicz with, and we'll see if they can actually do that.
I think it'll be very interesting, Shotgun. You mentioned it, and it's really all about momentum. This team couldn't seize it early on in the season. I think they have a little bit now, and the question is, can they hold it?
Great, great point there. We'll see if they can. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peer Style Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to my co-host, Jack Smith, even if he can't get into a bar. Thank you also to head coach Andy Stankiewicz for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it. Also, thank you guys for listening. Please like, share, subscribe, leave us a review on your favorite podcast listening platform, and I hope you guys can join us for the next episode of the Dado Download Podcast.